Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic anti-choice talk show host. The phone number here is 1-800-8-ENYART. We'll be talking about the war. 1-800-836-9278. We can talk about the war, about what's happening in Iraq and the Persian Gulf, and, of course, about the Christian understanding of matters of right and wrong and the use of force, the death penalty, war, foreign policy, governance. Those are the issues that are on the table. To start with, Saddam's speech. Did you hear anybody in the studio audience hear his speech? Now, I was working very late last night, and so I happened to see it live when all the cable news networks went over to Iraqi TV. And it lasted maybe 10 minutes or so. And it was extremely obvious that it had been taped before the war started. For example, Saddam, the only things that he mentioned were things he could have known before the war, like Allah is great, and the cities, the major cities in his country, and the cities that we would attack first, like Basra and Qusar and Mosul. And he mentioned a couple of his divisions and some of his commanders. But what was interesting is that he was applauding the divisions and the commanders who surrendered. He talked about Basra as though it had been taken, telling them to hang in there and hold on. Basra hasn't been taken. We've surrounded the city. And the extraordinary fights that were going on, he never mentioned. He didn't mention that they've taken captives. He didn't mention a down helicopter or down planes. There are significant things Saddam did not mention that he absolutely would have. His forces that were actually fighting and putting up a battle, he didn't mention. The ones that surrendered, he did. So it seemed to be extremely clear that Saddam's talk last night, that was supposed to be, by the way, the Iraqi government said Saddam was coming on live. Now, 3 a.m. Eastern time, 1 a.m. Mountain time when I saw it, the Iraqi government, that would have been 11 o'clock in the morning in Iraq, and the government had said that Saddam was coming on to make a live statement, and it was so obviously taped. It was, not only was it taped, there were jump cuts in it, and in news you don't do jump cuts. But there, it was edited together. You could tell it was edited. And I don't know what the noise was in the background, but for about a minute, there was the clanging of pots and pans. I don't know why or why. Oh, and remember the dazed and beat up Saddam we saw a couple days ago with the black-rimmed glasses and the sort of slow of speech? This Saddam was post-bomb Saddam. You know, the first bomb we dropped in this war? How often do you get to have a war where the first bomb likely injures the leader of the opposing army? Saddam, he may not be dead, but he has the mother of all headaches. He has the mother of all headaches, and his regime is still certainly in force and in power, but there are problems for Saddam Hussein and his government. Now, the Battle of Baghdad, there's been a lot of criticism because there are more casualties, and you know, people are saying it's not going as well as we had expected. Well, the Battle of Baghdad will be the decisive battle of the war. And that's the push that's underway right now with our warplanes, ours and Britain's, that are bombing the Republican Guard that are located mostly to the south of Baghdad to help prepare the way for our ground troops. Now, we are somewhere within 20 miles of about 30,000 Republican Guard troops. And we have not very far from those Republican Guards. We have Delta Forces, Special Forces, Britain's SAS, close into Iraqi positions, and they're helping direct our bombers to pummel this this division of the Guard, the Medina division of the Republican Guard. And that bombing is going on nonstop. Now, in the first Gulf War, we had almost 40 days of bombing, and we deteriorated the opposing force by a percentage, and the exact percent is debated, but we were shooting for a 50% deterioration. And we very well may not get a 50% deterioration before our ground troops meet the Republican Guards. But yesterday, you know, it was last night. Now it's, you know, it's daytime in Iraq. No, wait a minute. It's 5 a.m. in Iraq right now. But yesterday, all night, we had B-52s, Apache helicopters. What else do we have? Harriers, A-10 tank busters. And according to the Pentagon, we are significantly degrading the Medina division. And we'll sure find out soon enough. Now, one helicopter was lost, and it was an Apache. And I had, early in my career, I had a computer career before I got into the media, and I worked for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company on the Apache. And so I'm always especially interested in what happens to Apache pilots and the missions that the Apaches fly and how well they did. One helicopter was lost, and the Iraqis said they shot it down. And then they showed quite a bit of footage. And I only had a brief time to glimpse the footage, but I didn't see where they had shot it down. It may have had a mechanical problem. The sand is beginning to whip up there. But at any rate, the two pilots appear to be unharmed, and they better remain that way. We'll be right back. 1-800-8-NYART. This is listener-supported radio right here, Bob Enyart Live, a news call-in talk show where the host is a Christian and we base our conclusions on principles from the Bible. And so is it right or wrong to fight a war? If it's ever right, how do you know which side is in the right if either side is in the right? How can you identify a just war from an unjust war? If force is necessary, what does that mean about the death penalty? If force is acceptable, if force is justified, what does that mean about the death penalty? Well, we have a video called God and the Death Penalty. And do you know that the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel of Jesus Christ? And the Bible is a criminal justice textbook. It lays out the law. The criminal law, courtroom proceedings, it lays it all out. And the evidence that can come against the accused. And the threshold for judging whether innocent or guilty. And judgment day itself and punishment. Jesus Christ was crucified. The death penalty is at the heart of the gospel. And so if you're up on the death penalty, and what does the New Testament say about the death penalty? Well, then you're prepared to understand the story of the Bible. If you want more information, give us a call. Order God and the Death Penalty, 1-800-8-N-YARDS. That's 1-800-836-9278. By the way, if you're not a Christian, ask for Mount Moriah. We'll send that to you for free. But the death penalty video, check it out. Okay. Now, if you're on our monthly audio, monthly Bible study albums, if you subscribe to those, well, then you start out with an overview of the Bible, and right away you get into the law of Moses. And boy, is that interesting. Because God revealed a law to Moses, and within that law, for example, in the Ten Commandments, you have thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbor, don't commit perjury. That is the foundation of a criminal justice system. It's the foundation. And then when you understand what God was doing, you could figure out so many other parts of the Bible. So if you're interested, check out our monthly Bible study albums. Welcome back. Bob and Yurt Live, 1-800-836-9278. So we have coalition land forces, ground forces, that are now at Karbala, south of Baghdad. And Tony Blair has said that they're preparing for the crucial moment when they confront the Medina division of the Republican Guard. And the criticism is coming in that the supply lines are becoming dangerously stretched. You guys in the studio audience, have you heard that? That we're stretched out all over Iraq. And when you look at that, it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback, but our war planners are expert in logistics and battle tactics. And every decision in war, just like in life, it involves trade-offs. So what are they trading off by having long supply lines that are not well reinforced? Well, they can accomplish that and put off the battle for Baghdad. If we wanted to, we could take maybe, instead of a week to reach Baghdad, we could take 6 weeks. But the war will not be over until we're in Baghdad. The war will not be over until we're in Baghdad. So if we take 6 weeks in order to get to Baghdad more safely, see, this strategy has tremendous risk. But if we take 6 weeks to get to Baghdad more safely, that's another 5 weeks of fighting a war. And how many casualties might you lose in five more weeks of a ground war? So is it risky? This strategy is tremendously bold. Tremendously bold. It is risky. But the trade-off is great. The trade-off is great because we don't want to give the Republican Guards 6 weeks of warfare to look at what we're doing, to come up with still, yet more creative approaches or rebuttals to what we're doing. So we want to shorten the war, surround Baghdad in a bold move, and ultimately save American lives. And you know what we're doing other than just fighting the war? We're fighting this war. We are fighting oil well fires. We're protecting oil fields. We're looking for weapons of mass destruction. We are going to extraordinary lengths to protect civilians, Iraqi civilians. I mean, we were watching a firefight live, along with 100 million other people, lasted a couple hours, and there are Iraqi troops inside a compound, and the firefight's going on, and then Iraqi civilians, it looked like women, were walking back and forth in front of the building. And so we stopped firing. Now, it could be some, you know, it could be an Iraqi dressed up like a woman. Does their religion allow them to do that in case of war? Well, they rape women there in Iraq by government edict to keep people in line. So I don't know if they would do that. But at any rate, the restraint that we have shown where Iraq, what was the – now, here's one reason Christian conservatives do not want women in combat. You know one reason? Because in the Persian Gulf War, what percentage of American women who were taken prisoners of war, what percentage were sexually molested or raped of the women taken in war? Anybody recall the percent? 100%. And now we already have a female prisoner of war. And the media has, with one voice, said that we have treated the Iraqi prisoners of war with respect, with human dignity. We have fed them. We have provided medical care for them. And they have apparently, I mean, Iraqi TV, this is how stupid that government is. They captured some of our soldiers and, 10 soldiers in an ambush, and apparently killed five or so in execution style. They zoomed in close to their faces and showed the bullet holes in their forehead. That's execution style slaying. So, all right, now let's see which – we'll go to the phones here, 1-800-836-9278. Let's go to Goshen, Indiana. Delmar, speak your mind.
Yeah, I was wondering, when we do take Saddam Hussein out of power, what would be a just way of deciding how the resources of that country would be, you know, distributed or who owns it?
Okay, now – Delmar, while you were asking your question, my control room was talking to me in the IFB. So could you repeat the question?
Right. I assume that Saddam and his regime, like, own the oil fields or whatever.
Yeah, the government, right.
It's what would be a just way of deciding, okay, somebody's got to own it after this.
Right.
How do you? How would you figure that out short of creating a socialism system saying that everybody owns it?
Well, there's I don't think there's anything inherently evil in the government owning some land. And like, for example, our government in America owns some land, but the government, you know, could easily, like you said, you know, socialist or communist thinking could try to take control of all the land or all the land of any economic value. And so in the case of Iraq, I actually don't believe we need to solve that problem. I have no doubt that what will happen, I'll tell you what will happen, then we could talk about what maybe what should happen. But what will happen is whatever government ends up being installed in Baghdad, they will use the oil revenues for government functions like infrastructure, and to fund their government. That's what they're going to use that money for. You're saying, should any of that land go back to, what, families who owned land 100 years ago? Is that what you're asking?
If you could determine that, I would think that would be the right thing to do. But
yeah, if you could find out that that family, you know, particular families owned some land and it was taken by the government unjustly, you could go through that.
My assumption is that you probably won't be able to do that. Those families may well have been, you know, killed off because they had claims to the land.
Well,
no, that wouldn't be surprising.
That's certainly possible. I don't know that there's a government in all the world that would have the discipline to take an economically rich resource that it has control over and sell it to the people, you know, or return it to rightful owners. I can't imagine that happening. Should it happen? Like we said, if you can determine that these oil wells, this field, had been taken unjustly, then it could revert to the ownership of the people who owned it. But that's tough to do. You know, for the most part, the whole world, every square acre inhabited in the world has been taken from other people through the history of the world. So it's real hard if you want to unwind the injustices at national levels. Real hard. Like, for example, in Hawaii, there are Hawaiian natives who say America should not have Hawaii and it should go back to the descendants of King Kamehameha. So because he was the king that was in power when we took over Hawaii. Okay, that would be just, right? And right. It would be just because his family went around to all the islands and killed all the local kings and took control of Hawaii. So why would it be just to give it to King Kamehameha? You'd have to go back to those islands and find the people who ruled them and their descendants. And then you have to find out whether they unjustly took the land. So, Delmar, it gets very complicated.
Sure.
And
it would seem like, though, like maybe the UN solution or you know, a communist solution would be to say, okay, every citizen owns an equal share in these oil wells.
Right.
And it, when ownership is not clear, it's a little bit to argue that that wouldn't make a certain amount of sense.
Well, here, I have not put a lot of thought in this, but based on my studies of government and economics from the Bible, let me give you my initial take on what I would do if I were suddenly the king of Iraq.
Oh, cool.
Here's what I would do with the oil wells. I would offer the wells individually for sale to investors and, you know, a single individual or a family or a corporation or a partnership could go in and they could buy wells from the government and run them themselves. And I would look for a reasonable market share for doing that. And I would take that revenue, or if you can't sell the wells, then take the revenue from the wells and use it to offset the income tax, which should be a maximum of 5% income tax.
Sure.
So I would use it to offset the income tax, bring the income tax as low as perhaps 0.1%. Don't abolish it, not for any economic strata, because everyone has to learn the importance of paying tax and sharing, you know, the duty to support the government. And so I'd use it to offset the tax and give the Iraqi people close to a 0% tax, no sales tax, no property tax, and encourage economic activity. And within 5 years, Iraq would have the strongest economy by far in the Middle East.
Yep.
So that's what I would do without further thought on it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Delmar, thank you.
All right.
Appreciate the call. 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. You know, is this war about standard of living? Hey, Bob and Yurt Live is listener-supported radio. Have you checked out the store at kgov.com? Up in the upper right hand of the homepage, you could click on shop online, get Bob's materials, and look at the store. It's just coming along so well. We're just thrilled about it because the store does a great job of telling people what the materials are all about. And there's a 30-day money-back guarantee on everything. Does that include donations? The 30-day money-back guarantee on donations? Well, it's 30-day money-back guarantee if not satisfied. And we've always been satisfied with the donations. So I guess not likely that that be refunded. But anyway, oh, by the way, thank you to those who make donations. If you click on the donations page of the store, that's in the upper right-hand corner of the store homepage. You'll find out that there are two options. You could donate to Bob and Yurt Live or to Denver Bible Church. That's the church that I pastor. And the difference is Bob and Yurt Live, we often talk about politics. I'll give you an example. If you vote Democratic, it's a sin. It's a sin to vote Democratic. You have to repent and stop doing that. Okay, now if you were a 501c3, IRS-approved, government-recognized nonprofit organization, you couldn't say that. So we're not. We want to reserve the right to tell people, Hillary, she might not be the Antichrist, but she's probably his mother. Or some close relationship. Did Hillary and Vince Foster ever have? No, guess not. Sorry. So anyway, Bob and Yurt Live donations are not tax deductible off your income, but donations to Denver Bible Church are. Now, not all churches have, a great outlet for their ministry like a radio show. But we're lucky to have both, and therefore, if you need the deduction, you could do that. Welcome back. Bob and Yurt Live, 1-800-8-N-YARTS, 1-800-836-9278. To what extent is this a war for oil and to protect our standard of living? Well, the first Gulf War, and this is the sequel, this is Gulf Wars Episode 2. The first Gulf War was partly to defend an ally, you know, the way Joshua defended the Gibeonites, an ally. Maybe not the greatest ally, but they were allies. Joshua defended them in the Bible, and God gave Israel the victory. And so we were defending Kuwait, but not only because of that, but because Saddam was going to go into Saudi Arabia and end up controlling, what, half of the world's oil reserves. And he had hopes to go beyond that. Go to Qatar, go to Yemen, go to the UAE, United Arab Emirates, and beyond there, Jordan and Syria and Lebanon, and then ultimately to destroy Israel. That was his dream, build nuclear weapons and nuke Tel Aviv and Haifa. And that was his goal. And so we had the moral right to say we're going to stop Saddam right at this point. And we had our own self-interest in defending our standard of living, because if he controlled the world's oil supply, our standard of living would decrease. And as a result of that, people think, well, that's a pretty selfish reason to go to war. Now, the standard of living, what happens when the standard of living decreases? Goes down. What happens? People die. People die. What happens if a father with three kids has a really, really hard time making ends meet? What happens to that father? Like when taxes are too high, you know, the Democrats and even the Republicans raise taxes faster when they're when they have the White House in the last 50 years than the Democrats do. But when our government raises taxes, that puts extraordinary stress on the lives of families and dads and moms. You know, stress is one of the leading killers in America, contributing factors to heart attacks. Now, thankfully, heart attacks are not killing nearly as many people and as early as they were doing 30 years ago. We made a lot of progress in that area. But it's still, what, the number one cause of death? And so stress and economic difficulty, you can't have vacation or time off like you'd like. You can't spend the time with the kids because you're struggling to pay the bills. So, yeah, fighting to defend our standard of living. And also, by the way, fighting verbally against the Republicans for raising our taxes over and over and over and over and over, and the Democrats, too. Those things are important, and they're worth fighting for. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-836-9278. In Ada, Oklahoma, Gary, speak your mind.
Hello, Mr. Inyart.
Gary, could you speak louder?
Hello. I hope I don't ruin your show.
Well, go ahead. Speak. Yeah, good.
Me and a couple of guys were talking at work today, and we were talking about the reporters that are in Iraq covering the, you know, the war
right
in Iraq.
Right.
And I had this thought cross my mind that I wished some of these reporters would just die, would get killed.
Because, tell me why.
Well, if these reporters, because their point was, they said that that these reporters were endangering our soldiers.
All right.
By reporting, you know, things.
Okay,
that,
okay. Gary, let's talk about that.
And
right.
So,
there.
And so I just, if that's true.
All right. Let's talk. Let's start with that.
I just wanted to know if that was.
Yeah. Well,
right.
Certainly, that can happen. And when you have 500 journalists embedded with troops within individual units, there is definitely possibilities that they can give away, even though they've been instructed. If they follow the instructions to the T, or if they slip, they could give away information that the enemy can use. That's absolutely true.
They could use to harm our soldiers.
Yeah, right.
And so that's what.
And a couple of journalists have been killed already. But
yeah,
let's. So.
Would a person be right in thinking that, you know, hey, I want these guys to just.
All right, well, Gary, you made the point. Now let me give you some input. Earlier in the show, I said that every decision in warfare involves a trade-off. And pretty much in life, every decision involves a trade-off. That's what a decision is, a trade-off. And so the Pentagon knew that if they embedded journalists with the troops, there would be a trade-off. And so what they were betting was that the benefit to the military effort would far exceed the added risk and the dangers. That's what they were betting. And I personally agree with that decision. I'll give you a couple reasons. For one, this war in the battle for Baghdad will not be the end of the security needs of the United States. Do you agree with that? Our security needs will go well beyond this war.
Yes.
Okay. In America, generally, the media has been very much like Bill Clinton for the last 30 years
right.
when he said, I loathe the military.
Right.
And the media has been very dovish, very liberal. They've despised the army. They view our soldiers as bloodthirsty, you know, losers and just the dregs of society that couldn't do anything else. So they picked up a gun and they want to go kill somebody. Now we have 500 journalists who have been embedded, and almost without exception, they're speaking with one voice saying how respectful our guys are, even to Iraqis, the concern for civilians, the desire not to be bloodthirsty, but to free the Iraqi people, to defend innocent people from becoming victims of terrorist attacks. And so what we're doing is we're converting the American media. I'm talking about NBC and the Washington Post and Newsweek. You know what? Let me tell you what a Newsweek reporter did 2 days ago.
Okay.
He wasn't an embedded journalist. He was independent. Him and a photographer went into Iraq on their own, not part of any unit. And they're traveling with maps and GPS units and driving two vehicles in case one stops working, gets stuck. And so they're going across the desert, and they're looking for a highway. They're just in the desert following tracks that were made by who knows who. And they come to a highway where there's a long U.S. convoy of Humvees and light armor vehicles, tanks. And so they're passing the vehicles in the convoy. They're driving more quickly than the convoy. And their goal was to get out ahead of the convoy and cross a bridge up ahead. Now, to me, that sounds like a stupid goal. But this is what happened. They got ahead of the convoy, and they saw a guard at the side of the road with a rifle, a gun. They thought he was an American. They pass him, and it was an Iraqi soldier. And the Iraqi soldiers start shooting at these guys. And I don't know the story from the photographer's side, but from the reporter's side, he panicked, he floored the car, and he got about 300 yards away, and he fishtailed, and he started heading back toward the Iraqi, just in a panic. And now six or seven other Iraqis come out, and they're all firing at him. His car flipped over in the middle of the road. He hit the divider, and he's facing away from the Iraqis. The back of his car is getting hit. So he kicked out his front windshield and ran out of the car. Bullets are going all around him into the sand. And he doesn't know what he's going to do. And then the convoy catches up. And the Iraqis all ran for cover. And he flags down a convoy officer and says, "Hey, there are a bunch of Iraqis back there hiding. They were shooting at me." So he gets in one of the vehicles, and our soldiers go, and they took these seven Iraqis captive. So here's a Newsweek reporter joining the right side, not being neutral at all, and helping our guys capture or kill Iraqi soldiers. That is progress like we have not seen in 50 years in the American media.
That's true.
So there are trade-offs. The military knows that it has been despised by the media, and they have determined, hey, we want the Iraqis to see the force and the skill and the training. And there are risks to that, because if our guys get killed, it might be shown on live TV.
Yeah. Oh, I see your point.
All right. And there's we could talk about the pros and cons for the rest of the show. But thank you, Gary, and we will be right back. Hey, if you sign up for our monthly Bible study album, you'll be able to answer this question. All right, sign up for the monthly Bible study albums. Here's some questions you could answer. Which testament, the Old Testament or the New Testament, talks more about hell and torment in hell? Is that the Old Testament, which Christians have been taught is the time when God was mean, or the New Testament, which Christians have been taught that's when God became nicer? I'm saying that a little facetiously, but that's how we've mostly been taught. So which is it, the Old or the New Testament, where God talks more about hell and the wicked being tormented forever. Which is it, Old or New Testament? Which Testament is the Old Testament or the New Testament where more people are killed by God? Old or New Testament? Which is it? Which Testament is it, the Old or New Testament, that a husband and wife were killed just because they didn't give enough money to church? I like that one. Going to have to preach on that at Denver Bible Church. Get that tithe in motion going. What was our collection this past week? I don't even know. Sometimes we forget to take a collection. What kind of a weird church is this that we have? Well, finances, of course, no church finances should be the motivating factor. But at Denver Bible Church, we try hard to put finances in perspective. Absolutely in perspective. And I doubt that the number one accusation against Christianity is that Christian ministries are in it for the money. I doubt that accusation could go very far at Denver Bible Church. Hey, by the way, if you're in Denver sometime, come by and visit, and you could check us out on the web, and you could even get the monthly sermons on audio tape. Welcome back, Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-N-YART. That's 1-800-836-9278. When Saddam was on TV live at 1 a.m. last night, one of the things he encouraged Iraqis to do to the Americans and the British is to, he said, quote, cut their throats. That's one of the things he said. Let's see here. Oh, by the way, there was an interview with a former UN weapons inspector on, I think it was on MSNBC. And it had to do with the chemical plant in southern Iraq that we captured. And whether or not that's a chemical weapons plant or not, it's still unknown. But the plant itself was disguised. They use what they call sand casing, sand sculptures around the buildings to hide the buildings not only from the ground but from satellites. And the Iraqis have done this previously to hide their weapons programs. They got enough sand out there. And this facility was apparently managed by an Iraqi general. Normally a general wouldn't manage a manufacturing plant, unless it was weapons-based. But right now, at least, in fact, a couple generals, at least now they're being interviewed out of the country and without Iraqi government minders. That's a good development right there. But a former UN weapons inspector, I remember, he was on Fox News last night. And here's what he said. See what you think of this. He said that it's very unlikely that Iraq would put a chemical weapons plant that far south. It's very unlikely. Now, I just cracked up the minute he said that, because I'm thinking, you un-weapons inspector, you un-inspector, you. Where do you think Saddam would put a chemical weapons plant? Where you would expect he'd put it? I mean, the very notion that you would think, wow, I wouldn't think he would put it there, that would make you think, oh, yeah, maybe it would be. You idiot. What kind of qualifications do these guys have, these uninspectors? They, a number of them have no qualifications whatsoever. We could tell you about one, but we won't. We could tell you about two. Two perverts on weapons inspectors, one in Washington, one up in New York. Okay, let's see here. All right, we're going to go to Massachusetts and then South Bend. In Springfield, Mass, Bill, speak your mind.
How you doing, Bob?
Good, sir.
Just a quick I want to get a comment from you. I heard a guy say in service, actually in the pulpit, he said that there was suffering in heaven, not forever, but for a certain time until, you know, death and hell and everything was passed away, that there would be some type of suffering in heaven.
Well, okay. Well, is that related to this show?
No, I wasn't listening to the show. I just wanted
okay,
to call
Bill,
up.
Okay, Bill, good, good. Okay, good. Let's talk about it briefly.
Right.
You know, in heaven, God will wipe away our tears.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, you know, that could be a figure of speech, but I think there's a lot to that.
Mm-hmm.
And God is God, but he's not a magician.
Right.
Right? One of the themes of our Bible studies is that God is real, heaven is real, you are real, the lives we're living are not a dress rehearsal. This is all real.
Right.
And so when you die and go to heaven, it's not magic. Mm-hmm. There is no magic. There's God and his mighty power, but there's no magic. So we know that people in heaven have knowledge of what's happening on earth, at least general knowledge.
Right.
And so if you go to heaven and you leave loved ones on earth who are unsaved, there's no way to, it would require magic for you to not have sadness and grieve for your loved ones who
right.
are going to hell.
All right.
And not only that, think about the people that we have hurt in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are going to hell because we gave them the excuse.
Mm.
So I agree with that, Pastor. I wouldn't put the date on it like he did. I wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, grieving, you deal with grieving over time, and God will wipe away our tears, and it will be painful, and we'll see without all the deceptions and distortions we use right now,
mm-hmm.
and we will really see how we let down other people and the people who are in hell, partly because they didn't hear from us or partly because we were an example that they used of why they're not a Christian. So I think that pastor has some insight there.
Yeah, he also said don't judge, though.
Well, some. See, we said some insight. Some insight there.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
All right.
Have a good night.
Thank you. God bless you. And that'll be part of that pastor's suffering when he gets to heaven. He'll find out that he took Hillary's favorite verse and made it his mantra, don't judge. Watch out. When you and Hillary agree on anything, you're in trouble. 1-800-836-9278. Let's go to South Bend, Indiana. Dean, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob.
Hello, sir.
Hey, I bet the Iraqi military never have to worry about having a sex scandal at their Air Force Academy like we've got going on at the one in Colorado Springs.
All right. Tell me, you're being cute, so tell me your point for putting it that way.
Well, I just wanted to throw it out there.
Be more direct.
Huh?
Be more direct.
It's amazing our military does as well as it does with all the social engineering going on in it.
Okay. So the Air Force Academy has a problem with male cadets sexually
groping,
harassing or groping or molesting or in some cases raping female cadets.
Right.
Now, which university in America does not have that problem?
All of them.
Right, they all do. So it's a symptom of our perverse and corrupt culture, our decadent culture, that because of Hollywood and maggot-infested, long-haired FM-type radio stations where there's no respect for women.
Right.
Because the women on, you know, your typical drive-time FM radio show, the two guys and the woman has to agree to be sexually harassed, otherwise she won't get paid. They won't hire her.
So, Bob, isn't that kind of scary that we're going to be teaching the Iraqis how to show respect for women because we're not biblically based?
I agree. I agree. We are. We have an evil culture, and our government. Our government is evil in many respects, but there is one difference. And the issue you brought up between our government and Iraq's government. In Iraq's government, at the highest levels, they they officially sanction rape and they order rape in order to teach a lesson to their detractors and to keep the men in line. So, and that testimony has come from countless Iraqi exiles, countless,
right,
tell the same story. So there is a difference there.
Right.
I mean, that's a pretty strong difference. So even though our government doesn't know right from wrong when it comes to laws regarding sexual immorality, they don't know that adultery should be criminalized.
Hey, speaking of our government screwing up the laws, in Texas, they're having a Supreme Court's hearing a case about two homosexuals that have they got arrested for violating the sodomy laws.
Right.
And they're trying to get that knocked off the books, too.
Yeah, and it probably will. I mean, that's been the trend. And so we've legalized adultery and fornication, homosexuality, pornography. And by the way, most Christian leaders support all of that. We have a list of the major Christian leaders,
right,
who believe that not only should adultery be legal and pornography should be legal, even morality in media. The Christian president of that group, Bob Peters,
right,
believes that Hugh Hefner has the right to sexually exploit women and produce pornography.
Yeah, I've heard some of those programs. That's pretty sick.
Yeah, but that's the Christian leaders in America almost stand with one voice saying you have the right to produce pornography and you have the right to commit adultery and you have the right to commit homosexual acts. That's a far cry from even 200 years ago when those behaviors were criminal.
Yeah.
And they've been criminal for 3,500 years in the Judeo-Christian culture. Well, more than that, but that's since Moses.
Yeah, and I think you're God's criminal justice system's right on the bat.
Well,
because, you know, that stuff's, you know, the Bible says that stuff's wrong.
Yeah, well, hey, I appreciate your call.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you for your call. I appreciate that. All right, so... Well, tomorrow night, in fact, all this week, I'm sure we'll be talking about the war, but it will not be just talking about the war. We'll talk about the biblical principles that go behind the questions of the day, the questions of every day, the questions in your life. Right? Judgment and condemnation and rebuke. Are those things that only government should do of other governments? What does God say about individuals? What does Jesus say about individuals rebuking and not forgiving those who are unrepentant? You know, these are important questions. Some Christian pacifist, by the way, pacifism is a sin. Just for those who can't quite think clearly and need to be spoon-fed, pacifism is a sin. If your church is a pacifist church, your church is overall having a negative influence on the world around it. Your church is aiding those who hate God. Because God said, do not profane me. In Ezekiel 13:19, God said, do not profane me, keeping people alive who should not live. Saddam Hussein should be killed. Osama bin Laden should be killed. Terrorists that we capture should be killed. And Christians who don't know that, they blur the distinction between right and wrong, and they get people to doubt that there's a God of justice because they see injustice everywhere. Hey, this is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences. Do right.